Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Basari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 5, Bhagavan is the objective of all Vedic knowledge. Page 60. O Lord, if fools give up bhakti, the all-inclusive path, and suffer to attain realization of Atma without bhakti, they simply attain suffering and nothing else. They are like fools who beat empty husks. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4. It gives realization of the highest bliss, Shivadam. It destroys even the root of the three sufferings of ignorance. Right? So the three kinds of sufferings, that's coming from ignorance. Right? So that's there before the modes are even there. Right? The Avidya Shakti is acting upon the jiva from anadi, from before they come into the material creation. It is superior to meditating on Brahman. This is stated because some persons think that one cannot gain the ultimate bliss without liberation. Right? So that's why it says, if fools give up bhakti, the all-inclusive path. So that means it includes that. You know, it's just like, let us say, you get a cup, and then from a cup, you get something put in the cup. Right? So then you have a philosophy that it's all about the cup. But now, let's say you order a drink, it comes with a cup. It's all inclusive. Does that make sense? You get the cup, you get a napkin, you get a straw, you know, all that comes together. It's not separate. So that's the foolishness is it's thought that bhakti is a path, just like there's all these other paths. And so, therefore, as in their path doesn't include bhakti or the others, then they think it's the other way around. When bhakti already includes these other paths. So when you get bhakti, you get liberation. Right there. And the cause of its excellence is not just in being a rare attainment. To indicate this, the sarupa of the Bhagavatam is described. The work promotes Bhagavan, Bhagavatam. And is eternally endowed, mut, with the Lord's natural Shakti, Shri, in the form of His name, etc. Thus the name of the work indicates that it contains as a whole, just as blue lotus indicates a specific object. Otherwise it would have the fault of having portions which present extraneous topics. But it doesn't just have a portion of it just giving external topics. It means it's the whole thing. It is said, Granto Stadasa Sahasraha, Srimad Bhagavatad Bhidaha. The work called Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. Garuda Puran. Oh, no, you put the period on the other side. Okay. The commentary says, the Bhagavatam is defined as a desire tree. End quote. Sometimes the work is simply called Bhagavatam. That is like calling Satyabhama by the name Bhama for short. Right? So Srimad Bhagavatam. But you can call it for short Bhagavatam. Like that. The reason for the power of the work is the excellence of the author. The author is Bhagavan, Mahamunehi. The crest jewel of powerful persons, Maha, inclined to the highest contemplation, Muni. Samunir bhutva samachintayat. Becoming a sage, the Lord reflected, Narayana Upanishad. Again, move the period. The Lord first revealed Bhagavatam in abbreviated form in the Chatushloki. Then he presented it fully in this manner. So, yeah. So if you understand the Chatushloki and all the different things it can do, you understand, then you'll appreciate Bhagavatam. If one doesn't appreciate the Chatushloki, it means, of course, there's always going, Bhagavatam's so wonderful, you can always appreciate. But its completeness is there in the Chatushloki. Because it's showing all the different aspects. Like, so right now, this Sundarbha is discussing the aspect of, how do you say? Krishna is the absolute, right? So it's the first shloka of the Chatushloki. It's showing that aspect, but how that's connected to the person, right? Paramatma Sundarbha will show the second verse, right? Then Krishna Sundarbha will show the third verse. Same time as then the fourth verse. That'll be the Bhakti Sundarbha. Right? Because that shows the path of devotion and all that, how you attain. And then the fifth, the prayojana, what's gained by all that. Does that make sense? So it's a very, very straightforward. So all means this whole book, that's all contained in the first verse of the Chatushloki. Because it's not just he is everything, but how he, the person, is everything, and then defeating all philosophies that think otherwise. I meditate upon that pure, spotless Narayana, who is free from suffering and death, and who previously revealed this incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas. Srila Vyas revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Sukadeva Goswami. And Sukadev mercifully spoke it to Maharaj Parikit. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13-19. Right, so this means we're Suta Goswami speaking again. So this must be after Sukadev and Parikit have already, they're not part, they've exited the narration. Right. So we see, as he said in the beginning, that the Lord first revealed Bhagavatam in abbreviated form in the Chatushloki. He showed that to Brahma. Right, Brahma gave it to Narad then to Vyas, and then Vyas, then he presented it fully in this manner as the Srimad Bhagavatam. There may be excellence in other works generally, but a direct encounter with Bhagavan, the crest jewel of Purusharthas, the highest object of knowledge in all scriptures concerning knowledge, is easily attained in Bhagavatam. The work's exalted power is expressed. Can Bhagavatam immediately be Bhagavan immediately becomes, we're changing it, either has to be can Bhagavan immediately become fixed in the heart by the scriptures and their methods. Yeah, it's a question, so take out the S. The word va indicates a side glance, well, maybe a little bit after a long time. End quote. Bhagavan is immediately fixed in the heart of those who even desire to hear Bhagavatam. It's just like Jamuna is so special. Just by desiring to see or to bathe, then you get the benefit. You know, saying, by seeing you get benefit, by bathing you get benefit, but even desiring to see you get benefit. Same with Charinamrita. You desire to take, but somehow or another you can't. You get the benefit. So that makes sense. Quote, why does everyone not hear Bhagavatam then? End quote. Those who hear must have Sukriti, Kriti Bihi. Without that Sukriti, the desire to hear does not arise. So they don't desire to hear it. That's why they don't hear it. You desire to hear it, Krishna will arrange. He's sitting in the heart. He knows. You want, he'll arrange. Or, kim va parahi, can be taken as a separate statement. What greatness is attained by other processes described or understand described or undescribed. Realizing Brahman or Dharma mixed with worship of the Lord with no material desire, leading even to liberation. Okay, now I get it. But greatness is attained by other processes, described or undescribed. Okay, so realizing Brahman or Dharma mixed with worship of the Lord with no material desire, leading even to liberation. The Lord in one moment becomes steady in the heart for persons who become successful by bhakti in successive steps of sadhana, kriti bihi. Right? Because if you one follows the process, then nishta comes, stability comes. Right? Bhagavatam mentions that. By regular hearing, then the anarthas are removed, then one becomes steady, one becomes fixed. So that's the process. So in practicing the sadhana, that one becomes fixed, then one has that desire to hear. The Lord is always steady in the hearts, starting from the moment that person's desire to hear. So when you desire to hear, he becomes steady. Like that. So if we're not steady, it's because we have other desires. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Thus, Bhagavatam is the best among all scriptures, distinct from what is propounded in Karmakanda, Upasanakanda, and Jnanakanda. Since this knowledge attracts the Lord, right? Because it's direct. Karmakanda, Upasanakanda, Jnanakanda, they are describing how to worship the Lord. But they're starting from indirectly. And then, you know, they may mention it about his position and bringing it up and everything. But the performer of these sections may or may not understand or appreciate the Lord. You know, it's just like to worship a demigod by the rules of the Veda, you have to worship Shaligram first. Having worshipped Shaligram, then what's left from that, that's offered to the demigod. Then you do the worship to the demigod. Nowadays, some people still follow that, some don't. But then what's meant here? Right? In other words, bhoga is offered to the Supreme Lord, prasad is offered to the demigod. There's a message there, right? And so these things are there. So the point is Bhagavatam is direct. So that was the difficulty with Mahabharata. It has more, and it's more direct, it could say, than the Veda and other aspects. But it's still not direct enough. Three times the word atra in this work is spoken to emphasize the special quality of Bhagavatam. Thus everyone should hear Bhagavatam. Veda Vyasa spoke thus to Sukadeva, right? So this is the glories of Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva is speaking. Right? Because before that, he wasn't appreciating this platform. It means everything it says, like here, the others, the word va indicates a side glance. Well, maybe a little bit after a long time. You know, can you become fixed in the Lord? He says, yeah, a little bit after a long time. You know, it's just like by bathing regularly in the Ganges, you'll become purified after a long time. But by associating with a pure Vaishnav, immediately, just a moment, you're purified. So that's the whole idea, is that you're trying to appreciate the greatness of Bhagavatam because of its directness. Now, you could be bathing in Ganga for so many reasons. But associating with the pure Vaishnav, then they're directly connected with Krishna. And so therefore Bhagavatam is the same. Like all the scriptures are there, but Bhagavatam then is directly connected. Okay. Is that? Yeah. Vritti. Having stated that the process of devotional service to Bhagavan is the highest dharma, and the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam, which promulgates this knowledge about Bhagavan, is the best among all the scriptures. Next, the essence of the knowledge of Bhagavatam is presented by quoting the famous Chaturshloki verses from the second canto. First, the outline of what is taught in the Chaturshloki verses is demonstrated in the next two anuchedas. Okay, then after that it gets further, or this is as far as it goes?
After that it explains the Chaturshloki.
Okay, so first is just the outline of what's there in the next two anuchetas. And then after that will be the?
Chatushloki. In each anucheta, one also the chatushloki.
Okay. Yeah, so you can maybe mention that here.
Okay.
Just, and then after that will be a full explanation in you know, of each shloka, just there. Just so you know it's coming, otherwise you think this is it. Then you can mention it again when it comes up. Now he'll explain the chatushloki bhagavata. Anucheta 103. Okay. Similarly, Sukadev's heart should also be in agreement. In the Chatushloki spoken by the Lord, Bhagavan is the meaning. By teaching about knowledge of the Lord indicates himself. To teach his own scripture called Bhagavatam to Brahma, the greatest devotee, the Lord promised four items that should be explained. Jnanam param guhyam me yad vijnana samanvitam. Sa rahasyam tarangam cha grihana gaditam maya. Please understand the most secret knowledge of my form, along with realization of that form, and also understand about prema bhakti and sadhana bhakti, which will be spoken by me. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31. Rudriti. Right, so this is just before he's speaking, right? So he's saying, you please understand this. And having said that, then he'll speak the Chatushloki. Rudriti. Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma is the topmost devotee of the Lord within the universe. And therefore, the personality of Godhead replied to his four principal inquirers in four important statements, which are known as the original Bhagavatam in four verses. These were Brahma's questions. 1. What are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? 2. How are the different energies of the Lord working? 3. How does the Lord play with his different energies? 4. How may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? Right, so you see just the four verses right there. Right, the answer to the four verses. The prelude to the answers is this verse under discussion. When the Lord informs the Brahma that knowledge of him, the supreme absolute truth, as it is stated in the revealed scriptures, is very subtle and cannot be understood unless one is self-realized by the grace of the Lord. The Lord says that Brahma may take the answers as he explains them. This means that transcendental knowledge of the absolute supreme being can be known if it is made known by the Lord himself. By the mental speculation of the greatest mundane thinkers, the absolute truth cannot be understood. The mental speculators can reach up to the standard of impersonal Brahman realization. But, factually, complete knowledge of transcendence is beyond the knowledge of impersonal Brahman. So, you can say, oh, but then they know everything. No, they only know that feature. Because it's general, it's generic, so that, yes.
We see sometimes devotees also try to understand Bhagavatam by their own mental abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it's not working, even though they're practicing.
Mm-hmm. Because the Lord has to reveal. Because how is he revealed?
Mercy.
Yes. And so then is the analyzation, how are they analyzing? What approach are they using?
Ascending.
Yes. So how will that ever reveal the Lord? Why would the Lord reveal himself through the ascending process? Because in the ascending process, what's the problem? Where's the foundation? Yes, it's down. Then you're going up to the Lord. So how will the Lord actually, in reality, be revealed through that process? That's the problem with any kind of, non-sampradayic knowledge, whether it's based on the Veda or not, right, is that the ascending process means you're starting with yourself and your abilities and your situation and then comparing the Lord to that. It's like Dr. Frog, right? And so then it can't reveal the Lord. You get some idea. You can get the unlimited aspect or the non-changing aspect. That can be that much the Lord will reveal through the inductive method. But that's as high as you can get. But it's still, why are you doing it? Why is it important? Because of you. You're interested. You want to be liberated. You are intelligent. You're using your intelligence. Therefore, you got it. So you can see it's an intellectual form of karma kanda. In Ajaimini, it's I did my work, my kriyas, right? Therefore, God has to give me the results. Right? In karma, you do good work, you get good results. Do bad work, get bad results. So who does it depend upon? Me. If I do good work, God will give me good results. If I don't do good work, God won't give me results. So it depends upon me. That's the inductive method. So we're starting from our platform of perspective, our experiences and all that, and that combined, you know, our pramitri chaitanya, right? Because that's based on our identity, right? When we're talking about consciousness, the three features of consciousness, they're connected with the three features of the subtle body, right? So the vikara? Vishaya.
Vishaya chaitanya.
Vishaya, okay. Something with a V. Vishaya chaitanya, that's connected with the working of the mechanics of the mind. Pramana Chaitanya is connected with the working mechanics of the intelligence. And Pramitri Chaitanya is with the workings of the false ego, the identity. Right? And they'll all be working together, but you can analyze what each one does. But of course, they all work together. You know, just like you can identify what the frying pan does, what the vegetables are doing, what the spoon's doing, what your hand's doing, what your eyes are doing. But they all work this at the same time. You know, is there an order to it? There may be some things, like you have to put the pan first and then put the vegetables, and then you have the spoon. But at the same time as when you put the ghee in and stuff like that, you use the spoon to move it around before the vegetables. Right? Does that make sense? So, before the vegetables, the spoon existed. And after the vegetables have been digested, still the spoon remains. You know, so you can give some interesting Upanishadic, you know, so, but they go together. You do everything together. So you can analyze it in this way. And so then the problem comes is because the identity is I'm intelligent. I may be the soul, but you know, you were talking about the mental speculators. They may see I'm the soul, but then the problem comes up is that what's the identity, actual identity of the soul? Because they're thinking, I'm the soul and I'm God. I'm the enjoyer. I will enjoy Brahmananda. So how much can they know of the Lord? So it's just an intellectual karmakanda, right? I put in my effort intellectually, I should get the result intellectually. It's like I put in the karma, the physical work or the, you know, the wealth and all these things, the ritual, I should get the result in that. So you can see, that's why we say is that the karmis and jnanis are both material, even though the jnanis are looking for liberation. And in being liberated, then they seemingly are beyond the material situation. They're beyond our material situation, but it doesn't mean they're beyond the situation. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the prisoner gets out of prison, but he's just moving in the regular society. He doesn't go back to Godhead. You know, so it's different. So, yeah. So, therefore, if you are using that mental speculation, it's nice, you're contemplating Bhagavatam, but then you have to approach Bhagavatam as Bhagavatam says it's to be approached. And so these chaturshloki, this is what one has to know. So if there's a value other than Krishna, then it's material, it's maya. So we just value the intellectual process, you know, the academic process, like that, the objective process. Then it's material. The results we can get are only material. Because you can say, no, but it's Bhagavatam. Why? But the whole creation is Krishna. There's nothing other than Krishna. But because we deal with it separate from Krishna, therefore Krishna acts in this way. He acts as dead matter. Right? It means Prabhupada is explaining that, you know, there was a question that come up. I can't remember. I think Pusta Krishna Maharaj or Chutananda Maharaj, and it's not stated who the third person is, but that third person seemed to be one of the Prabhupada's traveling party. So maybe the secretary, maybe the servant like that. You know, it might have been Satsarup, I don't know. Because he's not mentioning himself. He's one of the few that just leaves himself out of it. So, the question comes up, is material nature conscious or not? Krishna says he's everything, is it conscious or not? And Chuttananda is saying, no, it's not. And why that is because if it's conscious, you know, we're walking around, we'd be worried about everything conscious and how we're dealing with everything. And so then the devotee went to, you know, illogical, but he went to Prabhupada and says, no, everything is conscious. Because the point is this Krishna. Krishna's conscious of everything. It's him. Like that. And even the living entity in the stone, they're conscious. Maybe they don't notice much. You know, may, after you pick them up and toss them somewhere, then they might, after a while, kind of notice, things seem to be upside down. Yeah. So there is that point. Consciousness is pervading everything. You know. Well, mention about it's inferior because it's not conscious, but we see is the workings of it. The demigods are conscious of it. Maya is conscious of it. The Lord is conscious of it because he's in every atom, between every atom. So everything is in that way conscious. But for us, it's unconscious because we're dealing with it as matter. Because for us, it's the external form. We're not interested in the personal aspect. Like if we're not interested in Krishna, how he's the supreme controller and enjoyer, why would we be interested in Maya, Devi, or Self, in the demigods themselves? You know, in the super soul. Why would we be interested in any of that? Because we just want to exploit something how we like. Right? Instead of to exploit something how we like, it shouldn't make any complaints. Yes.
That's the reason then the time is also a relative factor because that decides how this matter will function.
Okay.
Because the time factor decides how the matter will function according to the universal plan. And then because as we were discussing that the matter is conscious, but for us because of our conditioning we see as unconscious. Similarly the time factor also it's relative, but for us it's like It's a different, it's kind of absolute, you cannot go beyond till the time we are in a condition.
We're conditioned. Yeah. Yeah, time controls. Yeah, Prabhupada mentioned about Narad Muni, he says, you're saying is that we have to walk around on the ground because we're conditioned that that's all we can do. And he said, Narad Muni's not conditioned like that, that's why he can fly. He wants to go somewhere, he just moves through the air. He's not conditioned to think, no, I can only walk on the ground. Like that. Does that make some sense? So because they're using that means that they're hearing Bhagavatam, they're contemplating Bhagavatam, trying to apply it in their life, that's the good part. So that's why they are advancing and all that. But they may not be understanding Bhagavatam because they're using an inductive method. Like that. But if they're very serious, that they sincere that they want to know, they'll come in contact with the deductive. Right? And then they'll hear from that, and then they'll be contemplating on a higher level. But eventually, at some point, they need to switch the perspective. Just like you see in the Bhagavad Gita, means the whole knowledge that's in the Gita is all the deductive knowledge. But it's basically given to Arjuna in an inductive way to bring his consciousness up. But at the end, he switches it. Krishna says that you have to surrender to him. It's not about the dharmas. It's about serving him, pleasing him. So then that inductive element is given up. Because inductive means we're always starting with ourselves. Like we see is the forms and that they have in the spiritual world because they start with Krishna. That's their relationship with Krishna. That's their rati towards Krishna. Therefore, they have the particular form, the situations, the abilities in to express that. But here, it's because we have a particular way we want to control and enjoy. That's given us the particular body we have. Krishna is so kind that, you know, because there's energies, this one energy, but it can work internally or externally. Right? So, therefore, then, even though we're using external energy as a jiva, it can still be used as internal. Then it will give the effect. because it's the one energy. Does that make sense? Yeah. Out of many liberated souls, someone may be qualified to know the personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also said by the Lord Himself that out of many hundreds of thousands of people, one may try for perfection in human life. And out of many liberated souls, one may know Him as He is. Therefore, the knowledge of the personality of Godhead may be attained by devotional service only. Rahasyam means devotional service, means there is no other process. And as mentioned before, it's the all-inclusive process. Others aren't all-inclusive. Brahman means it's just about Brahman. Paramatma is just about Paramatma. Karma is just about karma. Right? But bhakti includes everything. Rahasyam means devotional service, right? Rahasya means the secret. Right? So that's why he says the secret of all secrets. Right? Lord Krishna instructed Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita because he found Arjuna to be a devotee and friend. Right? Because a friend means you want to do something to please the other person. That's a friend. Right? The person who always harasses, gives you trouble and this and that, they're technically not really a friend. They like being around you because they can harass you and it's fun. Right? Does that make sense? So it might be in high school, there's less friends than you actually think. Right? Yeah. Yes.
It's also known as Guhya Vidya.
Guhya Vidya. Hidden.
Hidden knowledge.
Okay.
Out of all the knowledge, this is the hidden. That is the bhakti.
It's the hidden. It's the secret. Yes. So the point is, but in devotional service, it's an open secret. You know, just like Prabhupada mentions that Radha and Krishna, their relationship, it's an open secret. Everybody knows, but at the same time, it's a secret nobody knows. Yeah, yeah. So devotional service is the secret, it's hidden. But when you come in contact with devotees, then it becomes revealed. Lord, okay. Devotee and friend, right? So he's devoted and he has a friend. So friend, that's the position. So the friend generally is taken as the madhyama position. Right? So you can take it that those three forms of devotional service of the nine are the three levels of that surrender. You know, once the servant of the Lord, you see yourself as junior to the Lord, you have that gratefulness, you serve the Lord. Then friend, then you try to do what pleases the Lord in the way of he likes the preaching and this and that. He's trying to save the, so I try to take part in that. And then the Atmanivedanam, that's complete surrender. Does that make sense? So yeah. So in this way, then friendship can mean that way. It's not that he's not making the point that he's in the Sakya Rasa. He's meaning that he's a friend of Krishna, so he wants to do things that please Krishna. Yeah?
Also that aspect of mutual trust.
Mutual trust, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Without such qualifications, one cannot enter into the mystery of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, one cannot understand the mystery. That's another for rahasyam, the mysteries. Yeah, probably use that a lot, the mysteries, like that. One cannot enter into the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, is there supposed to be a period after Bhagavad Gita?
Yes,
okay. Therefore, one cannot understand the personality of Godhead unless one becomes a devotee and discharges devotional service. So it's either a period or a semicolon or something. This mystery is love of Godhead. Right? That's another aspect. He becomes a devotee and discharges devotional service. So that could be another obstacle. That let's say the person's not actually using it so much as an inductive way. They're appreciating, you know, the knowledge and all that and trying to contemplate in that, but if they don't apply it in seva, right? In other words, Bhagavatam is talking about, some aspect of some aspect of devotional service and attitude, service being rendered, the appreciation of the devotees, Lord, but we're not applying that, then also you won't understand. You might get very good at analyzing, but that's why it said, tadvidi pranipatena, that there must be the desire to know. That's what was said before. Then pari prashna, you inquire submissively, you try to understand, and sevaya, you apply it. So that's why Prabhupada uses armchair speculators, because they just sit in their armchair and think. You know, or that one guy was sitting in his bathtub and thinking. Right? But they're not applying it. Right? So that's the whole point, is you have to apply the knowledge. Then it becomes realized. So that could be the other. If the person isn't so speculative like that, then it means he's maybe not applying it. And so he needs to associate with devotees to appreciate and understand how to apply it. And then apply it, then the result will be there. The mystery is love of Godhead. Therein lies the main qualification for knowing the mystery of the personality of Godhead. And to attain the stage of transcendental love of Godhead, regular principles of devotional service must be followed. Right? Because we don't know Krishna, we don't have that love for Krishna, that rati. We're not following the devotees. So therefore we have to follow those regulations that we're doing what they would be doing. Right? You know, it's just like, let us say, in any activity, then someone, their rules, right? And when you get so good at it, it comes naturally, spontaneously. You don't have to follow the rules. You're doing the rules, but it doesn't, just like, let's say, on the milk. Somebody's new at cooking. You tell them, always stir the milk. You know, they want to go, no, you stay there, you stir. Because if they leave, the milk will burn. Guaranteed. Right? But what's the difference? So let's say someone is an excellent cook, or a good cook, like that. So what's the difference? Do they have to always stay there and stir the milk, or can they do other things? They can do other things. Why?
Conscious.
They're conscious of the milk always. So even they go to the other side of the kitchen, or go do something else, they're always conscious of the milk, and they can tell when it's time to stir. No? So that's the point. So that means that spirit, oh, he's breaking the rule. No, he's not. Because the rule is there to get you to always be conscious. And these are the natural activities you do. So stirring doesn't change. But those particular strict rules are there to keep you just from doing... Does that make sense? Yeah?
Some mundane... He said that improvisation is based on preparation.
Which?
The improvisation.
Oh, improvisation is based on?
Preparation.
And preparation.
If
yeah.
you prepare, then you can improvise.
Yes, yes.
But if you just come out of nowhere and start improvising, it's not happening.
Yeah, it's not good. Hence, there's one Picasso. And then, yeah. Yeah. Yes, that's a very good point. So it's just a standard thing. Even on the material platform, that's the way it is. Because they can do so many things at once. Like that. So that's just the way it is. So it's just understood is that you have to follow these rules. It may be thought as, oh no, but it's a mentality, it's a mood. Yes, it is, but unless you have that rati, then you can't improvise. Right. That's the whole point. So that makes sense? Yeah. The regulative principles are called Vaidhi Bhakti, or the devotional service of the Lord. Right? So Vaidhi is devotional service. You know, so sometimes it's relegated, oh no, it's something lower, and then there's, no, it's all devotional service. And they can be practiced by a neophyte with his present senses. That's the glory of it. Such regulative principles are mainly based on hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord. And such hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord can be made possible in the association of the devotees only. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended 5 main principles for attaining perfection in the devotional service of the Lord. The first is association with devotees, hearing. The second is chanting the glories of the Lord. Third, hearing Bhagavatam from the pure devotee. Fourth, residing in a holy place connected with the Lord. And fifth, worshipping the deity of the Lord with devotion. Such rules and regulations are parts of devotional service. So, as requested by Lord Brahma, the Personality of Godhead will explain all about the 4 questions put forward by Brahma, and others also, which are parts and parcels of the same question. So, he's asked the questions, but anything else that's connected with that, he'll explain that in the Chaturshloki. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31 purport. Yes, good, this one has. Some of them don't have the where it's from.
Yeah. I started putting
it. Okay. Yeah, no, it should always be there. Because even though it should be obvious, they still have to then go back and, Because even if they don't notice that it's the purport for the verse that's been mentioned, at least they'll know, okay, Prabhupada said this. And if they go, what does this have to do with it? And then they'll look at, Okay, same verse. Okay. Understand, okay, then. Then the Jiva Goswami continues, understand knowledge about me, the Lord, Jnanam me, understood correctly by Shabda, spoken by me, Gatitam Maya. Others do not understand this. Only I understand, since it is most secret. It is more secret than Brahma Jnana. Right, so making the point is that it's knowledge spoken by him, given by him. That's what's important, not given by the internet. I'm sorry. You know, Google Guru is there, yes, but that doesn't mean he's the supreme guru. Like that. So it is more secret than Brahmajnanam. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanaha. Su durlabha prasantatma kotishvapi maha mune. O great sage, greater than those who are jivan mukta, and greater than those who attain liberation, is the devotee of Lord Narayana. Such a devotee who is in shanta or other rasas is very rare, even among 10 million people. Right? So the whole point is that if you have 10 million people and it's rare, then how much value is there in 2 billion? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So even other branches of the 2 billion, they talk about 600,000. Right? And so it's understood. It's rare. So... No? So that's Srimad Bhagavatam 6.14.15. And that's people. We're not even counting the bugs and everything else. I mean, it's just in one small area. The people are the smallest amount of living entities. Everything else is more. Yeah. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following purport to this verse. Simply desiring mukti or liberation is insufficient, right? Just desiring to hear about Krishna, desiring to hear Bhagavatam, desiring to, you know, as we said, bathe in the Ganga or Jamuna, or take Charinamrita, you're getting benefit. But here he's pointing out, just because you desire mukti or liberation, it's insufficient. You have to factually become liberated, otherwise you're not. When one understands the futility of the materialistic way of life, one becomes advanced in knowledge. And therefore he situates himself in the vanaprastha order, unattached to family, wife, and children. Right? So vanaprastha, then you're situating yourself in such a way you can be engaged in those direct activities that Prabhupada mentioned before. That's the prominence. So other aspects of family life, this, that, that's not the importance. They take a subordinate position. Right? Now this becomes the prominent. Like, in other words, these 5 main things become the young ghee. and other aspects of there are the anga. Right? Like that. One should then progress further to the platform of sannyasa, the actual renounced order, never to fall again and to be afflicted by materialistic life. So here he's pointing out that, yeah, even though one desires to be liberated, this does not mean he is liberated. So that's why there was a difference made, you know, even Ramananda Roy is making the point of taking sannyas. Then there's a platform beyond that. Only rarely is someone liberated. Indeed, although many men take sannyas to become liberated, because of their imperfections, they again become attached to women, material activities, social welfare work, and so on. Something they become attached to. Something they get distracted by. Right? So, Jnanis, yogis, and karmis devoid of devotional service are called offenders because they're all using Krishna's knowledge, they're all using Krishna's systems, his potencies, but what are they doing? So him as a person, they're offenders. They may be paying their tax in these areas in the way of the knowledge they're following, that knowledge of the ritual, they're following the ritual, the parama, they're following that and meditating and following. So on that level they are, but they're ignoring that it comes from the person. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Krishne Aparadhi. One who thinks that everything is Maya instead of thinking that everything is Krishna is called an aparadhi, or offender. Right? Because it's all Krishna. We may be under illusion that we can't see it's all Krishna. That's what the illusion is. That's why we're saying it's Parinamavad. Shakti Parinamavad. Is that it's a transformation of the energy. It's still the Lord. But it's the Lord doesn't change, but his energies adjust. But we're not seeing that, so therefore we're under illusion. That's where the Maya comes. Well, they just say, no, that whatever is there, anything, it's all illusion. So that means it's a transformation of what? Because if it's all illusion and it's a transformation, then that means what it came from has to be illusion. Or that could be also why they don't accept Satkarya Bhava, because they're trying to say Brahman is the origin, it's the cause, but it's not found in the effect. But the thing is everything else we see is like that, but then they'll say it's inconceivable, you know, but then it's inconceivable, then it's also inconceivable that the Lord is a person and how that works. Why they're stopping that inconceivable notion only at Brahman. They could take it further. So, yeah. Although the Mayavadis, impersonalists, are offenders of the Lord of feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted among the siddhas, those who have realized the self. Right? So they'll be counted amongst those in the Vijnana Maya. Right? Because for them Brahman is the basis, it's the most important element. Right? They may be considered near to spiritual perfection because at least they have realized what spiritual life is. So from that aspect, that they accept spiritual life, that's good. And you'll find for someone who comes from a Mayavadi background, then, you know, getting up early, sadhana, these things aren't a problem for them. Being studious, all that's not a problem for them. You know, understanding the Lord as a person, that's where the problem comes in. You know? And seeing that activities that are dealing in the realm of karma can be connected to the Lord, that's the problem for them. Right? They have the understanding of Naishkarmya, but that's just to purify yourself. They don't actually take it that it's directly a spiritual activity. Yes.
Can we say that Karni trying completely to disconnect the Lord from these energies, but Mayavadi, they partially see the connection, but not the entire connection?
Depends. I would have a because they don't generally, especially the Mayavadis, they don't see energies because they think there's Brahman and then there's illusion. So therefore, that's why they don't accept Shakti Parinamavad. For them, if there's any transformation, it's Brahma. So Brahman is transforming. right? But Brahman stays who they are. So that means then the Brahman can't be represented in the material energy at all. And so therefore it's all illusion. So then that's the whole point, is since it all belongs to Krishna, then to not acknowledge it that way, that's offensive. Like if we put so much emphasis on there's the person, and he's not, you know, he, you know, that point Krishna says, I'm everything but I'm separate. So we just put the thing, we go on to the estate to that very rich man and just say he's the person who he's in, he's beyond all these things. So none of this is him, none of this is important, none of this is all nonsense, this is all illusion. It's kind of like the guy's going, yeah, but it's my illusion. It's not your illusion. So there's something wrong there, it's not complete. So they don't really understand the energies. Well, the karmis, it means if we're talking Vedic karmis, then they'll understand and appreciate that there are shaktis and all that, but they may only attribute it back to really to the demigods. And there's a supreme controller above them, but that's as far as it goes. It means you acknowledge there is someone there, but all the focus is just on everybody else. Does that make sense? So then there might be a little bit, so they deal with the energies, but they're trying to enjoy those energies, separate from the Lord. Or maybe a little acknowledgement, you know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, how you say, the Lord gets the blood, we get everything else. You know, so that kind of thing. So then the principle, they're not understanding completely. Now, the impersonalists, then they're going to appreciate that, yes, to deal with all these energies and all that, without understanding the transcendental aspect is an illusion, so they give that up. So that's where they're superior. But it's not that they necessarily recognize the position of the Lord, really. The other one is that there's a Supreme, and then you deal with everything below the Supreme, His creation. They leave the creation, acknowledge the Supreme, but they separate the Supreme from the creation. So then what's the specialness other than He's unlimited and He's the greatest and all that? Right. So of all Ishwaras and that, you know, of all great personalities and that, He is the Muhammad Ali. Right? Like that. So that's the difficulty, is that each one has a problem. Where the one has a strength, the other one has a weakness. So they don't accept the creation, so that's a weakness, but at the same time they don't try to enjoy the creation, so that's a strength. But then they don't acknowledge the Lord as a person. And that part's not. While the others, the karmis, if you say he's a person, they have no problem with that. But if they think about it, they'll always end up with something impersonal, because that's as far as the impersonal is, as far as the material intelligence can think. So even though they're theistic, let's say religious, and they accept God as a person, but at the same time, as they're still materialistic in their approach, because they're approaching God to fulfill their material desires. So the karmis, you know, very few are going for liberation. You basically don't hear of that. And a few may have the concept of devotion to God. But as long as they don't push it too much, it's all right. You know, it's a personal sentiment, they have that devotion. But if they make it a philosophy, then they'll be ostracized. You know? That point is here. I mean, I even remember seeing once we were talking with somebody, or someone else was telling me how they pushed the point with a religious leader, and he made strongly the point, no, God gave us this creation to enjoy, you know, and that, you know, so they're not going to discuss further than that. That's all the more they want to know. And so they'll follow God's rules to enjoy it, but they don't want to know how to go beyond that in devotion. So there's a gratefulness towards God. There's a respect. They'll follow His directions and rules. But it's not about anything beyond that. This is not about. So each has their strength, each has their weakness. So that's the point, is that Krishna is the divine, what is that, moiety? Yeah. That means these two parts go together, the Lord and His energies. And so that's then you actually understand Bhagavan. Because otherwise, we understand an aspect of His all-pervadingness, you know, and maybe appreciate the non-distinct aspect of energies that everything comes from. Just like the earth, you get so many different varieties of plants coming up. It all comes from the earth. So the whole material creation is all based on Brahman. So it's all coming from Brahman. So that means Brahman must have generic qualities, but they're not specific. And so from those generic, the creation can be accomplished. Like that. So, you know, so there's something there, but they're not taking it, you know, or he's the controller of his energies, which is generally those who would consider themselves theistic or religious would take that line. But now, you know, they either, you know, use that for karma or jnana, right? But then bhakti is that as a person, he's beyond that, so the energies are his. He controls them. He's unlimited, but he's a person. So that aspect of the moiety, that's what's not caught, because it's one or the other. You know? And so, by default, just like the yogis, they worship Paramatma, but by default, if you push, they'll fall back into impersonalism. So in the same way is that the theistic person who, you know, is appreciating God as a person, when you get too much into detail, they'll switch back into impersonal. Like that. So that's the material world. Material world means karma and jnana. There isn't anything else. So that's why bhakti is unique, and it's all-inclusive because of the aspect of moiety. Right? It includes everything. But you have to understand it's the person who is that non-dual substance. Is that? Yes.
Because it seems that duality appears when we try to separate anything from the Lord.
Yes.
It doesn't matter whether it's in this world or the spiritual world.
Yes.
That creates the duality.
Yes, yes. When you say, yeah. When it's separated from the Lord, it will create duality. So that's how we come to be here. We're separating the spiritual world from Krishna. And so then we're in material consciousness, even though we are situated in the spiritual world. So, you know, by consciousness, we're in the material world, though physically we're in the spiritual world. You know, just like you see the great saints and sages, they're in the material world, but by consciousness, they're in the spiritual, because they see everything in contact with the Lord. So they live in the spiritual world, even though physically they're material. So this position, this is anadi, it takes place beyond. So even to get back to that, it has to be from the platform of being beyond the material consideration. You see Krishna and his energies as non-different. But at the same time, there's the uniqueness, right? Because they exist. If the Lord and his energies are non-different, right? But if there's existence, then there has to be visesha, uniqueness. There has to be kriya, the activity. There has to be purpose. Right? So therefore you see Krishna's existence, their existence, but then between the two, there is visesha, the difference between Krishna and his energies. The activities are different. One's the vishraya, the other's the ashraya. Right? Like that. So then, you know, the purpose of the end is to please Krishna. Okay. Some sense. And he is the ultimate goal. Because the fourth one is prayojana. So he is the prayojana. You know, so he's the origin of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes, that's what we're trying to get to, this simple point of stop seeing it as separate. Because that's the difficult point before what you're seeing, is that the inductive, you're seeing it as separate. You know, the objective, you're standing back from it and analyzing, not in the context of what it is. So how can you actually understand what something is? You know, it's just like, let us say, an academic analysis of a melody. It'll just be, well, there's this note, and it's held like this, and let's say, 60% of the notes within it are held only this much, and then, you know, another 20% is held like this, and that, and then there's a few that are held really long. And we notice that they move up and down, so this much percentage is that kind of like frequency, then there's ones at this frequency and all that, and then there's this movement sometimes between these two frequencies that's very common. And, you know, like this, do you understand music? Not at all. So that's the whole point. You have to see music in the context of what it is. So this inductive method is actually bogus. It's just bogus. Yes, you are using intelligence. You are using the mechanics of the intelligence. But that doesn't mean it's correct. You know? You're not understanding. It's just like, let's say you have a baseball bat. Right? There's a particular way you hold the bat. Right? You know, there's a particular way you swing the bat. You know, if you want to get the maximum effectiveness. So now if you're using that in a game, out in the field with a ball and other people, then that works fine. But if you're swinging that bat inside the living room and all that, and hitting things, you know, around the living room, that you could say, yeah, expert use of the bat. You know, you can say, you know, as he's smashing that vase and all that, wow, look at the grips like that. You can see when he connected, it really had this soft, his hands were tight, it didn't have, you know. Does that make sense? Because you can tell when someone's not holding the bat right, when they hit the ball, it makes a particular sound. And if it's held tightly, it makes a different sound. You know, so then you can tell, oh yeah, this guy has good technique. But what's the point? It's useless. So even if they're analyzing in so many ways and this and that and using the mechanics of the intelligence, taking it, you know, categorizing it and then expanding on it and all these things, but it's all useless. Because it won't show you how everything's connected to Krishna. That's the point. The intellectual process is to connect you to Krishna. The engagement of the senses to connect you to Krishna. Right? The engagement of the emotions, right, to connect you to Krishna. The situations to connect you to Krishna. Right? So whatever it is, it's for connecting you to Krishna. That's then real. But otherwise, if you take it, no, it's separate, then that means it's duality, so it's material. So, is that good?
It can be destructive. It can give destruction.
It can give destruction. Means the inductive method. Yes. Means you see is that, that's what I said before, is that he said these intellectuals are not interested in Bhagavatam. You won't understand in their environment. I remember Rabindra Sroop. Prabhu was explaining, because he's a professor, and he, you know, on campus. He was saying about how there's these professors in Boston that when they're really into, like, Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, because they're just so intellectual. And so they find it inspiring talking about. But they'll be sitting around drinking beer and talking about, you know, so he says this and here and uses this word. What do you feel is the reason he used this word and not that word? And they just speculate like that for, you know, just useless. They don't understand Sandarbhas. No one else will understand Sandarbhas. They get no benefit from it. It's not spiritual. Like that. You know, so we appreciate the devotional aspect, the rahasya, right? But we may, you know, struggle sometimes with the mechanics of it because it's just so, you know, the intellectual and the logic is just so perfect. And we may not be used to that. While then, let's say these modern academics, they may be more accustomed to the intellectual part, but they wouldn't have a clue about the rahasya. I mean, like nothing. You know, if it says, oh, it's rahasya, they'll think, yeah, yeah, because the common people can't understand logic, so that's what's the rahasya. When it's you know, no, that's not what it's talking about. Is that, yes?
It seems that by this intellectual approach, people also, although rasa is there in every object,
yes,
they somehow, I don't know how to say it, just, you know, the dryness of the process,
yes,
then the rasa is lost.
So they're kind of like a intellectual desert.
Exactly.
And whatever they touch dries up.
Dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Same, you'll find the same also with those who take the ritualistic aspect too far. It becomes dry. Because it's purpose to please Krishna and all that, and in the relationship with Krishna. So that's the point. That's where the taste is, because rasa means the Lord and the devotees. So when you see yourself as a devotee of Krishna and you're serving to please Krishna, that's where then taste comes. Like that. But if it's just the mechanics of it, then it will be dry. If it's just the, you know, in other words, if it's just the karma aspect, it'll be dry. If it's just the intellect, the jnana aspect, it'll be dry. So in other words, mundane tends to be dry. Right? And even if they're sentimental or this or that, It's limited benefit you get from the emotional content. It's there and then it's lost. While if it's between the Lord and the devotees, then that's never lost. Right? In other words, let us say you think of a very nice personal interaction with somebody. You know, an intense impersonal, intense personal interaction with somebody that happened 10 years ago or something, and you haven't had contact or had that interaction since. You think about it, it has that feeling of distance, of time. It's in the past. So you can think about it, and may have nice memories and all that, but you can't get that intensity. But let's say there was a really nice kirtan or something 10 years ago. You think about that, it's present. And so the experience, if you absorb yourself in it, it's the same. Because Krishna is eternal. While everything else is then controlled by time. Yeah. So that's the point, is that in contact with Krishna, that's where real rasa is, real taste is. And anything mundane, there'll be a taste at the moment, at the present, in the present window. Right? I'll taste it now in this 1/11th of a second as it passes through my consciousness. And then, depending on the intensity and the particular attachment I have to that, I can then think about it or discuss it with others for a short, limited time. And it still gives the present feeling, right? Because it's present is defined by grammar as that which is, you know, what's happening right now, but a little bit in the future, a little bit past. It has to be immediate. You know, it's just like, let's say you're in the kitchen and you're just washing the pots and getting things out and ready to cook. You haven't started cooking. Someone comes in the kitchen, oh, what are you up to? You can say, I'm cooking. And they won't say, well, what's on the fire? I see nothing. You're not actually cooking. What are you actually doing? You know? No. Or if you've just finished cooking and you're just kind of tidying up or this or that, what are you doing? Oh, I'm cooking. Yes?
Also in Nati Shastra, there is that instruction. If an act, something which is within the span of one day or two, you can present it in one act. But if it goes beyond that, then you have to cut the act and present it
in another act. Oh, that's a very good way to do it. Yeah. Okay, very nice. Okay. I say, up and coming, yes. Up and coming attractions. I was trying to think of the...
Stay tuned,
yes. Okay. Yes. How do we get into that whole thing of the present?
Non-dual.
Non-dual, yes. Because Krishna is non-dual, so he and his energy are non-different. And that's the whole point, is they're non-different. That's why there's the same feeling. But because they're different, that interaction is what generates the rasa. Because of the same nature, they're together. And then because they're different, that interaction creates rasa. Does that make sense? So that's what we're doing. So you see, the process is very, very simple. You look at it from the top. But we're so trained to look at it from the bottom that, you know, it takes a while to switch. You know, and as the old adage goes, I'd rather switch than fight, right? Nothing. No? Never heard that one? A commercial when I was a kid, there was a particular brand that was there, and its famous thing is that there's so many other brands, but I'd rather fight than switch. So they have all these guys that are that are using this brand, and they all have black eyes, you know, and they're all sitting around, yeah, I'd rather fight than switch, you know, it's so good, I'm not switching, you know. So we just reversed it for us. We'd rather switch. It means from the inductive to the deductive than fight. Yeah, you know, the academics, they'd rather fight than switch. Right? So.
It seems that it is always when they're inductive.
Yeah, but they never actually get to deductive. Their deductiveness simply means I'm hearing from some other authority in their line. It means if an academic goes out, uses their inductive, process, then puts together a theory and is accepted in the community, now teaching that theory to others, that will be called deductive. But the theory itself is inductive. So at least they have the concept of deductive. But for us, unless it's coming from Krishna, as it said before, is that Krishna says he's speaking it. Where was it? What does it say?
Just immediately after Prabhupada's five purpose.
Oh yeah, right at the top of the page. I was thinking it was so. Okay, understand knowledge about me, the Lord, jnana me, understood correctly by shabda, spoken by me, gaditam maya. Others do not understand. In other words, it's all spoken by him, and some will be directly what he's spoken, and others will be what having heard from the Lord, and then what they speak. Right? So that, like, Gita is spoken directly by the Lord. Like the Kapila Gita, Uddhava Gita, Bhagavad Gita, those are directly spoken by the Lord. But you see other aspects, those are then the devotees then speaking those. You know, or like, what was it? Maitreya, he heard directly from the Lord. But then when he speaks it, now he's speaking about the Lord. So, okay. Okay. Although the Mayavadis and personals are offenders at the lotus feet of Krishna, they may nonetheless be counted among the siddhas, those who have realized the self. So they'll be properly respected, you know, by etiquette. They may be considered near to spiritual perfection because at least they have realized what spiritual life is. If such a person becomes Narayana Parayana, a devotee of Lord Narayana, he is better than a Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated or perfect. This requires higher intelligence. Because someone who's become liberated, then he becomes a devotee. He's higher than that person. Right? Because they only know that aspect because they know the personality of Godhead. So they give up being an offender. So, Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.